Hunt, hunt, hunt.
All Packers, all the time.
He was a field-tilting player, and the reason why Gabe and many others are so concerned is that this guy's on the field, he changes the offensive dynamic. They are a different offense when he is there.
Okay, most of the time.
You know, Homer calls Matt LaFleur soft all the time. Matt LaFleur is like Vince Lombardi compared to me.
It's Jason Wilde on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. Jason Wilde is brought to you by Lakeland Supply. Lakeland Supply is in business to make your business better. Set up a free packaging and supply chain assessment at lakelandsupply.com. Exterior Pros. Ready to tackle your home improvement project? Exterior Pros and Baths is giving $3,000 off roofing, siding, windows, or bath remodels this month. Visit extpros.com. Also brought to you by Century Foods. Change your grocery game plan to locally owned Century Foods, home of the best meat, freshest produce, and tastiest treats.
We always love our time with our friend and teammate, Jason Wilde. Good morning, Jason. How are you doing today?
I'm good, everybody. How are you?
Good, good. It looks like all but one player on the 53-man roster practice in some capacity on Wednesday. Is this the healthiest the Packers have been since the beginning of the season?
It's certainly an encouraging sign. I'll be curious to see, because you practice doesn't mean that you'll be ready to play, obviously. But I think especially offensively, with what they've got going on, right? With Jaden Reed coming back, with Matthew Golden, who I talked to the other day, and I'm going to write about him today. He just was so downtrodden. He just seemed so frustrated with kind of how the season has gone. And, you know, he gets the shoulder injury not long after his best game. And then he's got a wrist injury now that's an issue. And as he said, I'm a receiver, so your wrist is kind of important. He barely played. What did he play? Like 9 snaps, Gabe?
I thought it was 5, yeah.
It might have been less. Yeah, it was single digits. Mm-hmm. I know that. I think Bo Melton played 9, which is, again, a sign of kind of where they're at that wide receiver spot. I don't know about Savion Williams. You know, they really, that's another one of those examples, as we talked about earlier in the week, about how I don't know if they're letting guys have more say, and Chewy should be encouraged by the fact that guys are trying to play through injuries, like old school guys like him. But if it doesn't do you any good if you last, you know, 6-7 snaps and then you're not available anymore.
Ever since Kraft went down with the ACL.
Repeat that. I didn't have you on.
Oh, sorry. Jason, how has Luke Musgrave been playing since Kraft went down with the ACL?
Well, you tell me. You're the 3-time Pro Bowl tight end. What do you see?
It looks as if they're trying to get him involved in the intermediate pass game. They're trying to get him downfield a little bit. He had the one play in the game where it was a great effort. You really couldn't tell if it was a catch or not, but I mean, I think people forget, Jason, that in 2010, JerMichael Finley was out. He didn't play in the Super Bowl. So This can still happen without him. I feel they're trying to get him involved a little more, and they're trying to take baby steps in order to do it.
Well, I think, and I talked to John Fitzpatrick, and I talked to Josh Wiley yesterday, and I'm hoping to talk to Luke today. It feels like they've kind of figured out, okay, none of these guys is Tucker Kraft. Mm-hmm. But if we figure out ways to deploy them, and you have to include Darian Kennard, too. I mean, he's basically the modern-day Kevin Berry. He's going in there a fair amount to be that extra tight end, the jumbo tight end. It feels like they've kind of figured out a good rotation there, right, and a way to utilize all those guys. First of all, I still can't believe that Luke Musgrave catch wasn't a catch. I've never, not since, and I may have mentioned this to you guys earlier in the week, I've never seen a worse replay angle ever. since you were playing. When there would be games where, you know, you were playing Jacksonville and they only had 6 cameras, you know, and I remember there was a time, it's a Monday night game, so there's extra cameras, so the replay official will have more to work with. that one, like, there's a dude's head standing, the guy's standing on the sideline, and the guy's head is in the picture.
Yeah.
And so I thought he caught it based on the Zapruder film that they had available to them. That said, I made the same comparison when it first happened, and then I was like, like, J. Mike was an overgrown wide receiver, right?
Yeah.
Tucker Kraft did everything and will do everything when he comes back next season. I get it. But, like, they don't have anyone, you know. Again, I bestowed upon him the ultimate compliment that his game was very similar to yours, except he's better at everything. And so I don't think they have anyone that you could just say, okay, this guy's going to play 85% of the snaps because he can run block, he can chip before he goes on his pass pattern, he can run the routes, he can run after. Like, one thing that I think they should be hopeful about with getting Jaden Reed back, even though he's not a tight end, is Tucker Kraft was so good after the catch. And you saw the touchdown that Christian Watson had. Maybe they're realizing that, okay, there are other guys that we can still get the ball too quickly, and then they can make something happen. Because, you know, you look back on Tucker Kraft's best performances, it's not like he ran, you know, 50 yards down the seam and hauled in a deep ball and then ran the final five to get to the end zone. He was catching the ball off quick passes and then trucking guys and getting big yards after the catch.
Jason, there have been a number of times where Matt LaFleur after games has talked about, yeah, it was just a limited amount of possessions in today's game. And again, that seems to be a byproduct of teams wanting to run the football and shorten the game, you know, and limit the opportunities for that offense. Is the solution to that as simple as they need to be better against the run on first and second down?
I think so. You know, Bill Huber was asking a bunch of questions about that yesterday, and I don't quite understand it either. Like, you know, I do remember Mike McCarthy used to always talk about, we want to have 70 plays a game offensively. And I don't think there's been more than two or three games where the Packers have had that this season. You know, it's weird because we're sitting here talking about how teams are, you know, there's limited possessions. And it does feel like, to your point, Gabe, LaFleur says that after, like, every other game, right? We've got 13 games in the books, and I swear he's said that six or seven times. And so I don't know what the solution is, but certainly, you know, being better on early downs. But, like, their defense is good on third down. The Packers' offense, I haven't checked this week's stats now that Monday Night Football was in the books, but they went into Sunday's games number one in the league on third down, and number one in the league on third and seven plus, the Packers offense did. So it's not like they don't do a good job of keeping drives going, right? I am very curious about Sunday from that perspective, because, you know, obviously Bo Nix is still very much developing. He is nowhere close to having arrived as a quarterback. They lost Dobbins, but the other dude that they've got, was it Harvey?
Yeah, R.J. Harvey
is productive, and I'm expecting, like, and Tausch made this point, so I have to give him credit, but it makes total sense. Like, the one team that has done a really good job defensively against the Packers more than anyone else was Carolina, and all they did was sat back in that two shell and just said, all right, let's see if you guys can go down the field and put together 10 play drives, which obviously take a lot of time, without making a mistake, without committing a penalty, all that kind of stuff. Now, I would say that their execution in the last several weeks has been much better, so I feel more confident the Packers can do that, although I don't know about against this defense, which is pretty damn good. But, like, I still, like, the Bears, you know, I don't know Dennis Allen at all. I know Al Harris is the defensive passing game coordinator for them. But it was almost like they said, hey, man, we're going to do what we do, and we're going to execute it better. And obviously, given the outcome, the Bears didn't. I can't wait to see how Sunday plays out. And then the following Saturday, are the Bears going to defend these guys differently than they did this past Sunday? Because I just – it feels to me – if you think back to all those conversations we had, Gabe, in the middle of the season, like, that was kind of the kryptonite for the Packers offense.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe Jordan Love and having Jaden Reed back and all these guys kind of rounding into form means that they're better equipped to deal with defenses doing that. But I can tell you this, it didn't seem to me like the Bears' approach was a smart approach.
Jason, according to TeamRankings.com, the Packers run on average 60 plays per game this year. That's right on pace with last season for the Green Bay Packers when they ran 60 plays per game in 2024. But it does rank 21st in the league, which is fascinating. Chicago Bears, by the way, according to this.
That's a great website, by the way.
According to this, Chicago Bears are running the most offensive plays of any team average this season. I want to talk about the wide receivers because Josh, you put a great prompt in here about this wide receiver room, when they're healthy, is it the deepest group since Jordy, Cobbs, Adams, etc.? Now, we're not saying that they're better than, because obviously we know how talented and productive that group was. But is it safe to say or fair to say that this is the deepest group since those guys?
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't know, like 2022, I mean, they had Alan Lazard as their number one wide receiver. That's
okay.
A pretty deep group, don't you think?
So eliminate I like that Alan season.
he's a good dude. But he, I mean, you know, again, we like to give Goody praise, which he deserves for a lot of things. But how Aaron Rodgers' final season in Green Bay had Alan Lazard as the number one wide receiver, I will never understand. To Josh's prompt point, yes, totally agree. Are we at the point where Jordan Love should be sitting out in Lambeau Field on a football or on his helmet, surrounded by all those guys just yet and put on the cover of Sports Illustrated? No, to your point. But yes, in terms of the depth. I mean, look, you know, the fact that Bo Melton can go in there when Wicks is hobbled by an ankle, which again, that's another one of those, you know, LaFleur says that he came into that game with the injury. He played, I think he played six snaps. It might have been him with six and Golden with five or
correct.
Something like that.
That is correct.
Like those two, you got nothing out of those guys. And the week before, obviously Wicks was arguably the best player on the field in Detroit. So yes, there's no doubt that there's depth. There's, you know, we're kind of back to the good problem to have thing about having so many guys and throw to the open guy. That's what Rodgers used to say all the time in that 11 season. I mean, that is an iconic SI cover. I mean, it really is. And it captured just how unstoppable that group was. And this group obviously doesn't have its tight end because J. Mike's on that cover. That was later, though, right? That was like 13, maybe 12 or 13. When that cover was what came out. But the bottom line is that it's a really good group, but to your point, it's not as accomplished just yet.
Jason, I know this is a little bit down the road, but I'm fully anticipating Halfley to get a head coaching job. Is there someone on the staff that they would promote that's worthy of becoming the DC, or will they have to go outside the
So that's a really good question. I'm very curious to see how that plays out for Halfley because, you know, look, would it be an unbelievable story for the kid who grew up a half hour from Giants Stadium, who used to go to Giants games with his family? Would it be an awesome story for him to be the new Giants coach? Sure. Do I think that with Jackson Dart and Malik Nabers and that young core Scadaboo, that they're more likely to choose an offensive coach? Yeah, probably, but I don't know enough about the inner workings of the Giants to say that for certain. But if he doesn't get that job, I wonder if he would do what Ben Johnson did, right? Which is a gutsy thing to do, right? Like, Ben Johnson had a bunch of opportunities to be a head coach following the 2023 season, and he was very selective, and he's like, you know what, I'm just going to wait a year, go back to the Lions, keep kicking butt there, and then see what jobs open a year from now. And I think he feels like he got the perfect job for him, right? The first overall pick, quarterback with talent, et cetera, et cetera. So I'll be curious to see if Hapley ends up getting a head coaching job, one, but two, if he interviews and then, you know, we start to hear kind of rumblings like we did about Johnson, where he could have gotten potentially jobs and chose instead to stick around and see what opened up a year from now.
Lakeland Supply, they're in business to make your business better. Set up free packaging and supply chain assessment at lakelandsupply.com. Jason, do you think we're going to continue to see Kingsley Engabare have about the same amount of snaps every game as Rashawn Gary?
No. I think we should see him get more. I don't know what the right thing to do there is. Well, yes, I guess I do. You got to play the guy that's playing better, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
It's a meritocracy. You guys know this. Like, I would love to have a conversation with Rashawn, because I don't want to sit here and rip people that I don't talk to. Like, one of my rules that I follow from a writing perspective, and I try to follow it from a conversational perspective, is I don't want to rip guys that I haven't talked to and gotten a better understanding of, you know, what's going on with you, kind of a thing, right? This week, I'm probably more likely, since Rashawn very rarely comes in there when we're in there during the week, I think I'm more likely to write a, hey, Kingsley Engabare is earning more opportunities story versus a Rashawn Gary is really not very productive for a $96 million player. But both of them are linked. But to me, you know, we're already at a point where, what does that tell you? I mean, you had so much fun with, and rightfully so, he's not a high snap count guy. but maybe he's not a high snap count guy, not because of his conditioning, although I did not think the way Williams ran away from him as compared to the way he couldn't run away from Parsons was a great look. But the fact that he is the player that he allegedly is, and certainly the salary that he is, the fact that they're splitting reps evenly essentially right now is enough of an indictment, isn't it? Like, he should be on the field like Max Crosby and like Micah Parsons and all these guys like that. Again, that I don't think that's an unreasonable expectation. So the fact that he's not, it says something, and he's never been a high snap count guy is not a great explanation for it.
You know what he looks like to me, Jason? Gary, he looks like a guy that's ready to retire. Wouldn't surprise me. Just doesn't seem like there's fire in the belly. And, you know, I played with guys like that are in their sixth, seventh, eighth year, they're just like, man, I really don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah,
you get
and look, I don't know if I would go that far, but I can understand why you would say that.
Yeah.
But you're right. Like, I the example I always use is Erasmus James, who played for the Badgers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was a first-round pick. He got to Minnesota. There was, you know, a lot of excitement. He's obviously very good at Wisconsin. But you hear Goody and LaFleur talk about this all the time. Well, we got a lot of guys who love football. Now, I have no idea. I don't have the kind of relationship with Rashawn Gary to have any sort of insight into how much he does or does not love football. But the fact that you would make the comment that you did at least would say to me, that's a question worth asking, right? Like, yeah. Eddie Lacy was a really, really good football player. Doesn't love football, right? It was a means to an end, and he could have kept pushing to play. He could have bounced around and collected more paychecks.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I remember Eddie. You would ask him a question. Hey, did you see what happened in this game? No, I don't watch football. Now again, I don't go out of my way to watch a ton of football if it's not the team I cover. So I'm not judging him on that. But to your point, like if in your draft process. And your acquisition process, you talk a lot about, we want guys that really truly love football, which I think is really smart, by the way. That's not a criticism.
Mm-hmm.
Then it should be at least fair to wonder when you watch certain players, okay, do they fit that, or did they used to love football and now they don't love it as much? And the money now versus when you played, like, mm-hmm. I always use like Sitton and Lang as an example. Like, they would have Frankied it back in the old days. They would have kept playing because they need to squeeze out three or four more years of paychecks. And now you just don't.
Jason, we appreciate you hanging out with us. Have a great one. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right, everybody. Take care. Be good.
Jason Wilde can be heard on Wilde and Tausch right after Jen, Gabe, and Chewy Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, right here on 94.5 ESPN Milwaukee. We've enjoyed having Professional Construction Inc. help us with our home projects. As you might know, my husband and I are not the most handy people. We can handle the little stuff around the house, but we may need to call our friends over at PCI to help us out with this balcony. As the snow and ice were melting yesterday, got a little trickle of water coming into the kitchen. And you know that means something's not right. Well, the friends at PCI, they can figure it out. They can diagnose it. They can fix it for us, and they can do the same for you. And maybe you're not ready for a full-blown construction project like we were when we had them do our basement. But if you're ready to refresh an outdated room, the PCI team can create stunning photorealistic renderings, a mood board, a curated shopping list to give you an idea of what your space could look like so you don't have to go all the way through it right away. If you're on the fence, if you're hesitant, this might help you make a decision. You can learn more about that at ProfessionalConstructionInc.com. It's ProfessionalConstructionInc.com.